Good morning and you're very welcome to the programme. Today, Minister for Public Expenditure Michael McGrath on a multi-billion euro plan to stimulate the economy. And we talked to Minister of State Pippa Hackett about winning farmers over to the green agenda. Will this coalition last and what will it mean for Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael? Bertie Ahern and Fionnán Sheehan are in studio. A cabinet fit for Cromwell, our political analysts assess Micheál Martin's controversial appointments. From hairdressers to childcare, Brian O'Connell and Devlin O'Rourke are on the ground as businesses around the country reopen their doors. And we'll analyse the weekend soccer and look at what phase three reopening means for sport. Damien Lawler and Lindsay Pete are here. We have all that and lots more to come between now and 12 o'clock. If you'd like to contact the programme, you can text us on 51551. You can tweet at Today Radio RTE or you can email todayradio@rte.ie. Michael McGrath, Minister for Public Expenditure and Reform, and Fianna Fáil TD for Cork South Central. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you, Sarah.
So the work starts immediately for you. This afternoon's cabinet meeting is going to begin planning the July stimulus package to restart the economy, hopefully. But whatever you come up with, is it reality, do you believe, that the businesses will close and jobs will be lost in the coming months?
Well, our country has come through a period of huge trauma and the COVID-19 virus is still in circulation to some extent, and our public servants have carried out tremendous work in responding to that challenge. And obviously there has been major economic disruption. We're seeing that in the businesses that have been forced to close over the last number of months. And what we are seeking to do now in the next number of weeks in the early days of government is to unveil what we hope will be a very significant and ambitious jobs initiative to support employers, to support businesses as they reopen.
Do you have any figures at this point as to how many people you expect to be unemployed at the end of the year?
Well, look, I just was in the Department of Public Expenditure earlier on before I came over here for a very initial briefing, and we will be getting into the detail of the July initiatives and the investment stimulus today at Cabinet and in the days ahead. And the stability programme update, which is the last forecast, as you know, of the
but
overall
economic...
But
just on that employment figure, I'm just wondering, do you have any sense or information at this point or projections as to what that's likely to be by the end of the year?
So I think, you know, we have the forecast that go back to April, where you're looking at an average unemployment rate of in the region of perhaps 12 to 14% was the projection at that time. But a lot of water has passed under the bridge since then. And I think what we're dealing with now is, as the economy reopens, businesses reopening today in many instances, it's like taking a bandage off a wound, and you will see the extent to which the damage has been healed. And I think there will be businesses that have very significant challenges. Some will face really serious viability issues. Some won't open today, may wait a while and see how things evolve over the period ahead. Others will reopen but will still face those huge challenges.
Okay,
so
and
I think
one
the picture is evolving, I think is the point
I
want
right,
to make, Sarah. The picture is evolving. We don't have a full grasp yet on the extent to which businesses and the wider economy can rebound, but that is the very reason why our first job in government is to introduce a jobs and investment stimulus.
All right,
into
one of
the
big issues around all of that, obviously, is the wage subsidy scheme and businesses and different industries calling for that to be extended. I know the Restaurants Association of Ireland are calling for it to be extended until next summer, and the Aviation Task Force calling for it to be extended until next April. Would you see anything of that scale being possible or likely?
So that is undoubtedly one of the big ticket items that will need to be dealt with in the July initiative. So at the moment, the previous government had signalled that the wage subsidy scheme would be in place to the end of August, and we will need to set out in the weeks ahead a roadmap for the future of that wage subsidy scheme. It has played a hugely important role in underpinning employment, in ensuring the continuity of employment for so many
businesses. Sure, it has, and I suppose businesses who might be considering reopening today might be wondering, can I reopen? And maybe the only way I could reopen is if this was an option for me. So I'm wondering, can you give people any idea? I mean, for example, could you even say it will be there until the end of the year? Can you give people any indication as to what you're thinking is
on this? Well, look, I mean, there hasn't been any government decision, as you will understand, and we'll have our first discussion on that issue and other issues today. But I think what I can say is that this important support cannot be withdrawn overnight. I think that when when it does end, it will need to be end in a phased and a gradual manner to allow businesses the time and space to plan for the future, as you say, which is so important for them. It has been a vital support for our economy. It was a very welcome intervention at the time. I think it has a future, and it will be one of the tasks that we have to adjudicate on in the days and weeks ahead as to what the future of it is. But I certainly do not see it ending abruptly. I think when it does end, it will need to be gradual.
Okay, and another specific call from industry and businesses, particularly in the tourism industry, is in relation to the VAT rate and for that to be cut. Some industries calling for that to be cut to around 5 or 6%, others calling for it to be cut to zero. Is any cut on the cards in your mind?
Well, look, I'm certainly not in a position to give a commitment on behalf of government this morning. But what we have said in the Brong for Government is that the July initiative will have sector-specific measures. And undoubtedly, the wider tourism and hospitality sector is among the worst affected by COVID-19 and the associated economic fallout. So we will need to take account of that. Taxation is one measure, but there are others, including the various working capital schemes that are currently in place. And I think we will look to see and improve and expand on those schemes. There is legislation that needs to be passed for the €2 billion credit guarantee scheme. We need to put on a statutory footing the warehousing of tax liabilities for businesses as well.
But fair to say the VAT rate cut is at least under consideration?
And also, sorry, finally, the issue, of course, of the restart grant. Can we do more in relation to grants and in relation to the rates waiver, which actually expires?
But would it be fair to say that a VAT rate cut is at least under consideration?
I'm not in a position to rule anything in or out at this stage. We haven't even had the initial discussion as a government on the package, but we will be having that today, and all issues will be on the table for discussion and consideration in the days ahead. But I think it will very much focus on, you know, cash flow, the oxygen that businesses need to survive, the employment supports that you spoke about in terms of the wage subsidy scheme, the future of grant supports.
Okay, Minister, I want to ask you just about the future then over the next 5 years of this government, if it lasts that long. Sinn Féin's finance spokesperson Piers Doherty said over the weekend that the programme for government provides for austerity not in year one, but in years 2, 3, 4 and 5. What's your response to that?
Well, that's certainly not true. There is no such provision within the programme for government. That is not to underestimate in any way the scale of the monumental challenge that this government is going to face, which is first and foremost about recovery, repairing, rebuilding the Irish economy, helping those businesses to reopen and helping people to get back to work.
Okay, so we know it's first and foremost about that, and that's what's going to happen in the first year and perhaps the second year, although people are making the point that we don't know how long we will be able to borrow at the rates that are currently available. But I suppose what I'm wondering is, like, for example, in the last time we had a Minister for Public Expenditure, to give you an example, in 1 year in 2012, around a time of great economic hardship and recession, there was €1 billion in cuts across the departments of social, welfare, education and health. Well, it was cuts in charges, actually, new charges in health in particular. And that went to back to school allowances, it was disability allowances, it was carers allowances. What I'm wondering is, can you guarantee people listening this morning that we won't see the likes of that again?
Yeah, so what I can say very clearly is that our plan to rebuild the economy is in the area, first and foremost, of investment and stimulus. That is not to say that there won't be, you know, difficult decisions over the course of the government's life. Of course there will be. But if you're asking me, do we intend to go down the road of, you know, cutting services, cutting core spending that impacts on people's quality of life, that is not a road that we intend to go down. And I want to be very clear on that. But the challenge we're facing is enormous. And I think in you know, 2 to 3 years' time, I would expect that this economy will have largely recovered and hopefully recovered to a very significant extent.
All right.
And we're going to adopt a very pro-enterprise approach to kick-starting, stimulating the economy.
All right, and
austerity
that point.
Austerity is not among our plans. And look, we know that some opposition parties, they won't give the government a fair wind or a fair chance. I think most fair-minded people will, and they wish the government well, because if the government does well, that's good for the country.
Okay, I want to turn to cabinet appointments now. And a few moments ago, Dara Cleary, your colleague and the new government chief whip and Fianna Fáil TD for Mayo, was on the Tommy Maron show in Midwest FM. He was asked if he told an Taoiseach Micheál Martin that he was disappointed with the position he was offered last Saturday. And this is what he had to say.
We had a very difficult conversation, and I did. I told him I was disappointed. I had hoped to lead a department. That's always been my ambition. And Tommy Maron, I can tell you that is still my ambition today. And it will happen. It will absolutely happen. But I am going to take on the job that I've been given. And I will be sitting at the cabinet table. The chief whip has often been called as the gatekeeper of cabinet, and I will be that gatekeeper. And I will be a gatekeeper for the West.
Very disappointed, he says, Michael McGrath. Can you understand why he would be very disappointed?
Yeah, and I didn't hear that full interview, but I did bump into Dara this morning around Leinster House, and we had a brief chat, and he told me he was going on local radio, and I very much respect the open and honest way in which he addressed that issue there in the clip that you played. He is somebody of huge integrity, of great ability. He will be at the cabinet table. As far as I'm concerned, he and Hildegard Nocton, and indeed Pippa Hackett as junior minister sitting at the cabinet table, will have an equal say as the rest of us. Because cabinet does not operate on the basis of majority votes or anything like that. It's on the basis of consensus and debate.
Yeah, and I've heard this line coming from yourself and other people over the last 24 hours that a junior minister, a super junior minister sitting at cabinet table, or the chief whip sitting at cabinet table, is equal to all the full cabinet ministers. I mean, Dara Cleary's not making that distinction. He's saying he's disappointed with his job, that he wants a full cabinet ministry. So why are you making the distinction?
Yeah, and he, you know, he is absolutely entitled to adopt that position, but he has also said there that he's going to make the best of it, and he's got a hugely important role to play as government chief whip and driving the programme of political reform. And Sarah, as I and Dara and others who are fortunate enough to have been chosen by the Taoiseach to serve in cabinet, as we were led in by Micheál Martin to the convention centre on Saturday evening, I looked at my colleagues who were sitting on the seats, and I saw people of great ability there who would love the opportunity to serve at the cabinet table. And so all of us who have the privilege of doing that have a huge responsibility. And I know that Dara will perform exceptionally well and he will be a very passionate advocate and voice.
Michael McGrath, the representation, equal representation for across all of Ireland. If you look at what Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar have decided to do here, and indeed Eamon Ryan, the government is left with no full cabinet minister west of the Shannon. This has been well aired. There's no northern voice in the Shannon, even. Grace Jones then has two senior ministers down there in Cork South Central. You have three, the Taoiseach and yourself and Simon Coveney. How is that equal representation? How is this a cabinet for all of Ireland?
So the Taoiseach and the other party leaders would have faced extraordinarily difficult choices in selecting the members who were going to serve within cabinet, and they have made their decisions based on all of those.
Did they talk to each other before they made their decisions, Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar?
Whether they would have talked to each other in relation to the identity of cabinet members, I don't know. Certainly,
of course. So was
this
a mistake, do you think? Because it's being reported today that Fine Gael expected, as did most people, I think, Dara Cleary, to be given a cabinet ministry. So was this a mistake that Leo Varadkar didn't put anyone there because he expected that Micheál Martin would? And because the two men didn't talk to each other in what is supposed to be a national government, the Western Seaboard has been left with no cabinet minister.
Yeah, I mean, it's one government, it's one cabinet. Dara Cleary and Hildegard Nocton, based in Mayo and Galway, will be at the cabinet table. I know both of them well, Dara better, obviously, and he is not going to be hiding behind the door, I can assure you of that. So the voice of the West will be heard loud and clear in this cabinet. Okay. And all of us who are in cabinet are ministers for the whole country. We're not ministers for a constituency, and we also have very strong members of the parliamentary party, and across the three parties, every constituency in the country is represented, and they too will be holding us to account. Make no mistake about that.
So
the voice of all parts of Ireland will be heard loud and clear.
Very briefly, Minister, about a report in the Irish Times this morning that AIB have said that they're introducing a de facto ban on offering mortgages to people who are on the pandemic wage subsidy or the pandemic unemployment payment. Do you think that's acceptable?
I'm not happy about that. It's something I would have come across in recent weeks, as mortgage applicants would have contacted me whose circumstances have not changed except that they are now on the wage subsidy scheme, but their income remains the same. And they had mortgage approval in principle, but when it came to drawdown, that was not forthcoming. And I conveyed my own views, my opposition and concerns on that issue directly to the Governor of the Central Bank, to the Banking and Payments Federation as as well. So it is an issue that we will certainly be following up on and raising, because where people's circumstances have not changed, mortgages should be honoured in full.
All right. Minister for Public Expenditure, Michael McGrath, thank you very much for joining me this morning. Well, for more now in the newly formed government, I'm joined by the newly appointed Super Junior Minister for Agriculture and Green Party Senator Pippa Hackett, and also by Michael Fitzmaurice, Independent TD for Roscommon Galway. And Pippa, thank you very much, Minister, for coming in to me this morning, and congratulations indeed on your appointment to Cabinet. It did come as there were plenty of surprises over the weekend, and your appointment was one of them, because as a Senator and not a TD, I think most people would have been looking at those representatives in the Dáil from the Green Party. Did it come as a surprise to you?
Absolutely. I mean, it's certainly something I wasn't expecting. You know, it wouldn't have been on my horizon at all because of that very issue that I am a senator and not a TD. I missed out on a seat in Laois Offaly. I was sixth in a five-seater. But look, I think, you know, it's an honour and an absolute privilege to be offered this, and to you know, I actually can't believe it. It's surreal.
Some reports that your fellow colleagues in the Green Party, TDs, are very unhappy about the appointment that they've been passed over. Are you hearing any of that? Are you concerned about it?
I haven't heard anything directly from my colleagues. I mean, most have contacted me with, you know, warm welcomes and congratulations. And, you know, I can understand if that is the case among some of them, but they haven't made it known to me directly.
And what is the mood in the party now, Pippa, coming out of what was a very bruising couple of weeks for the party, even though you did get over the line with a whopping 76% at the end of the day? What's the mood now?
I think there was a lot of reflection over the weekend from both sides, if you like. Look, I've received a lot of messages from people who campaigned against the programme for government, you know, just happy in one sense that we're now over that hump, and where we now have ministers at the cabinet table and they see the roles that they're going to play. And I think there will be a certain gathering of minds on this, and there will, I think, on the whole, I think people will be supportive and will like to see us, the Green Party, well represented and do well and get our policies implemented.
So what battles then do you feel that the Green Party have to win in the next year?
Well, I think ultimately, I mean, we were given the commitments from both Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil on the carbon reduction, the 7%. And I think that's getting started on that is going to be crucial for us. And of course, that covers those main sectors of energy, transport and agriculture. And I think I see my own role within agriculture as one that hopefully will, if you like, build that divide between agriculture and the environment. And, you know, I think I see the future of agriculture. It simply has to operate within nature's boundaries. And I believe it can do that. And I would like to, you know, see my own particular role in
OK, because we're going to be speaking to Michael Fitzmaurice at the Independent TD a little later, but there would be many rural politicians, and Michael is among them, who are very wary of what the Greens are going to bring to the agriculture portfolio. So what would you say to them?
I wouldn't be concerned about that at all. I think there's when you look at the agriculture sector in Ireland, it's quite it's the most unequal in terms of incomes. I think agriculture has now moved away from solely just about producing food. It also has a significant role to play now in delivering a public good to people, and public good in the sense of addressing the biodiversity crisis, addressing our carbon emissions. You know, it's a public good for agriculture to deliver carbon reduction. That's good for the whole country. Also elements of water quality, air quality and all those other environmental measures which are so important. And I think there has been a shift in how agriculture is viewed now, and it's not just all about food.
You said a couple of months ago in January that it should be a red line for the Green Party that Ireland should undertake no further lobbying to attain any manner of exemptions for agriculture and the agriculture sector on emissions. Are you happy that that's what this government will do?
I think I would feel strongly, and I think a lot of people would, that, you know, we can't give this free pass to agriculture. And I don't think this programme for government does that. I mean,
does it not do it in giving a recognising the special role of biogenic methane?
Not necessarily, because, I mean, the IPCC agree that methane has to reduce, and we all agree that it has to reduce, but it doesn't have to reduce by the same proportion as other greenhouse gases such as carbon and nitrous oxide, which are far more long-lived in the atmosphere.
So how would you be proposing for biogenic methane to be reduced?
I think it will. It'll might naturally reduce by changing in farming practices, adopting different. I suppose we need a system change in agriculture as we move forward. So if we, you know, we shift away from nitrogen use, we reduce the costs on farms for farmers to farm. I mean, we have in the programme for government a commitment to, you know, increasing the land, for example, under organic farming. Typically, organic farms produce less methane, you know, they're probably lower stocked, but they ultimately, you know, produce a product that should receive a premium in the market for farmers. So they're better off.
You also said last January that live exports are a blight on the country as a whole.
Yeah, and you know, the Green Party would still feel that, but we—it was something we couldn't get movement on in the talks. We had to compromise significantly there, but we did get commitments that they would, you know, absolutely increase the, if you like, the veterinary presence on all live export consignments, so and also vigorously actually pursue other alternative markets for those animals.
Okay, so if an opposition party were to put down, for example, a private member's bill to ban live exports, would you vote against it?
Well, I assume as a government, well, it wouldn't be my vote per se. I'd be in the Senate still, but I assume they're whipped. I'm not too sure. Actually, I assume they would have to vote in favour of the government. Unfortunately, that's part and parcel of being in government.
Are there any issues in which the Green Party would seek a free vote?
I don't know. I'm not aware of that yet. You might have to ask the TDs.
Would you have any concerns that your party would be railroaded by the bigger parties on certain issues?
I don't think so. I think the talks took, you know, a long time. There were 5 weeks of fairly intensive discussions. I mean, it was a sizable document that was produced in the end. So a lot was teased out during those talks. I think a lot of common ground was found. I mean, there are still points of difference. But look, you know, we're not here to be railroaded. And I certainly don't think our cabinet ministers and our TDs and senators will allow that.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining me this morning and congratulations again on your appointment. That's the Super Junior Minister for Agriculture and Green Party Senator Pippa Hackett. Well, I'm joined now by Patrick O'Donovan, who is Fine Gael TD for Limerick and former Minister of State at the Department of Finance. And Patrick, good morning to you and thank you for joining me this morning.
Good morning.
A lot of criticism in this morning's papers that the new government doesn't have a senior minister from the west of the country. A cabinet fit for Cromwell was the verdict of the West from People newspaper on it. Can you defend that, not having a senior minister from County Donegal to Limerick?
Well, just going back to your previous conversation, I think everybody, all of the political pundits in advance of the formation of the government, with the exception of Dara Cailleary, nearly everybody else was named. So you could go back to last week's papers and find that the entire line out of this cabinet was predicted by most political commentators and by most people in politics, with the exception of Dara. So look, I mean, there is disappointment. There's no two ways about it, and you can't dress it up any other way. But it is what it is.
Would you accept the argument that we're hearing from other ministers in cabinet now that it doesn't matter because he's sitting at the table? They don't vote most of the time anyway, so his say or his voice will have an equal weight to others.
Well, it's not that they don't vote most of the time. They don't vote at all. Cabinet doesn't operate by vote, even though there is a provision for votes. They don't operate on that basis. But look, I haven't spoken to Dara. I met him briefly at the convention centre, and it's very obvious that he's disappointed. There's an awful lot of people disappointed. That's what happens. And you could go back to the time that Enda Kenny farmed the government, or John Bruton farmed the government, or Albert Reynolds farmed the government. And I'm sure if you played back this show on the morning after those governments were farmed,
yeah,
find the very same argument.
Sure, I understand that. And I think everybody understands, Patrick, the people, like, everybody can't get a job. I suppose what I'm trying to understand from yourself is your thoughts that this argument that people who are super junior ministers or chief whip sitting at cabinet would have the same weight in terms of their views as other people sitting at cabinet, that the Western Seaboard is representative because there's a super junior and a chief whip sitting there from the Western Seaboard. Does that carry water, do you think?
I think it does. I think it does, because I think particularly in Hildegard Nocton's case, she has a defined role and she has defined responsibility with the area of transport, and there'll be defined expectations and there'll be defined demands both from her colleagues and from the opposition. So, you know, she has a very clear level of responsibility. Chief Whip is a different role in government, because you have a role across all parties and you have a responsibility not just to the cabinet, but you have a responsibility to make sure that from one end of the week to the other that the government survives. So it's not exactly an easy job. And it's somebody referred to during the week to me, it's like herding ducks without gates, particularly with three parties. So So it's not going to be an easy role for Derek O'Leary, but I'm sure he'll be well able for it. But I can understand coming from a region where we don't have a cabinet seat that people are obviously disappointed, particularly people involved in politics, councillors. Okay. And members of the political parties will naturally be disappointed.
Okay, and one of the ways that we're being told that this may be addressed to an extent is the appointment of Minister of State jobs. 20 Minister of State jobs, we're being told, will be announced over the coming days. Any need for that, do you think?
Well, the very people that will be saying that there isn't enough of a regional balance will be the very people that will be saying that there wasn't enough of ministers. I mean, I heard Dailean Kelly the other day saying that there were too many ministers as they had promised, and yet yesterday was guffawing about the fact that parts of the country were left out. So look, in order to have proper balance, there's 26 counties, there's 39 constituencies. In order for everybody to be happy, you'll never have everybody happy. And really, in my estimation, it's not the divvying out of the jobs at all necessarily is an issue. The issue is that the whole constitutional provision on which this is based goes back to 1937, when there was a totally different Ireland envisaged, when you had basically a constitution that was derived for what was a single party state operated by 100% by men in a very agrarian, inward-looking country, where 15 was more than enough. Ireland is a far more complex economy and a complex society now, where there are different needs.
Okay.
You didn't, in 1937, for instance, envisage a Department of Children and Disabilities.
All right. So, will you be hoping to get the call yourself?
I don't know, to be quite honest about it, because after the last 72 hours, the only thing you can expect is what you don't expect.
Fair enough. We have a Green Party TD in the Department of Agriculture. I was just speaking to Pippa Hackett there. How will your constituents view that move?
Well, they'll view it in the way that they viewed the formulation of the programme for government, which was with a very resounding response from the membership of Fine Gael to the programme for government. It's headed up by Fianna Fáil TD, and the commitments in the programme for government are clear in relation to the progression in agriculture and the continued output of agriculture and the continued growth in agricultural output. So,
all right.
I wouldn't be overly worried.
Well, thank you very much for joining me this morning. That's Patrick O'Donovan, Fine Gael TD for Limerick and former Minister of State at the Department of Finance, and possibly a new Minister of State over the next coming days. Sure, we'll keep an eye on that one. We'll be speaking to the opposition parties next.
Email todayradio@rte.ie.
Well, news in from our Europe correspondent Tony Connolly. Phil Hogan, Ireland's EU commissioner, has withdrawn from the contest to be the next World Trade Organization Director General. And we may get more on that from Tony Connolly a little later in the show. Right now, though, I'm joined by Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin, Fingal, and health spokesperson for the party. She joins me now in studio. And thank you for coming in to me this morning, Louise. So your party leader, Mary Lou MacDonald, has promised that Sinn Féin will be the most effective opposition in the Dáil ever, and on Saturday she accused Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael of having colluded in frustrating the voice of change and frustrating the will of the people. How do you defend the use of that term, collusion?
Well, I think what we saw over the weekend, the last couple of weeks, was the coming together of parties that we have for a very long time been saying have very, very similar platforms. For me, I struggled most days, and particularly during the election, to discern any real difference between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, and yet they told us the whole time that they were two separate parties. In fact, I think they actually had to go to the trouble of writing it into the confidence and supply that they weren't the same party, just in case anyone thought that they had.
And the use of the word, though, and this impression being given deliberately, I think, by Sinn Féin, that the two parties were plotting.
But they came together when they said they had huge differences, and they managed to bridge that gap. And it seemed that the only thing they could agree on is that they did not want to see Sinn Féin in government. And they came together to keep us out, rather than they came together as part of any positive alliance. They came together with that air of negativity, with the intent of keeping Sinn Féin out of government. And, you know,
they would say that they came together because Their party policies were more aligned than they were with yours. I mean, is that not just politics?
But I think what they wanted to do first and foremost was to practice the politics of exclusion, to ensure that we were left out of the negotiations. Like, it's quite possible that they would have involved themselves in discussions with all parties, and they didn't. And we had said as a party that we were available for discussions with all parties, and unfortunately Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael decided the best thing to do was the negative thing, and that was the thing of exclusion, and they didn't speak to us. But, you know, the government has been formed now, and it is our job, and it will be my job and others in Sinn Féin, as Mary Lou has laid out. And, you know, Mary Lou is our boss. She set the bar nice and high. She said we're going to be the most energetic and the most effective opposition that the state has ever seen. And I think we owe that to the people who voted for us to hold the government to account, but also, you know, to bring forward constructive solutions where we have them, to work with the government when we agree with them, to put forward alternatives when we believe that there are alternative ways to do things. So it won't be an opposition that holds the government to account by criticising them. It will be an opposition that holds the government to account by showing them that there is an alternative to the politics.
Well, we're also joined on the line by co-leader of the Social Democrats and TD for Dublin North West, Roisin Shortall, and also by Michael Fitzmaurice, independent TD. Roisin, do you feel like the parties have conspired or colluded against you?
No, I don't, I must say. You know, it's a democracy and different parties had conversations and discussions, and we as the Social Democrats engaged in discussions with Fine Gael and with Fianna Fáil and with all other parties. But our concern in relation to the parties that are now forming government is that, you know, while their proposals were aspirational and, you know, had many good elements, it did seem that they were simply name-checking things that might attract parties like the Social Democrats. And the big problem, of course, with both the framework document and the programme for government is that there's absolutely no financial underpinning. So, you know, there's lots of things like we'll explore, we'll examine, consider and so on. And our concern is that many of the things in the programme for government are likely to go the way of previous promises because they're not funded.
Well, Stephen Donnelly, who's the new health spokesman, new Minister for Health, is saying that one of the things he wants to look at is the quick implementation of SláintCare.
Yeah, and certainly that's what we'd like to see happening. The programme for government actually commits to accelerating the implementation of SláintCare, and that sounds very good. But then when you look in the economic section of the programme for government, what you see is that they say we will examine in advance of Budget 2022 appropriate measures to support the implementation of SláintCare. So, you know, SláintCare will only happen if the funding is provided for the additional staff, hospital beds, community services and so on to increase the capacity, which is so weak at the moment. But it won't happen unless the money is there. And, you know, what the programme for government is saying is they will examine that in a year and a half's time. So that's really, really disappointing. And I mean,
you worked very closely with Stephen Donnelly, obviously, Roisin, when he was in the Social Democrats. He was one of the co-leaders alongside yourself. Is he the right man for the job?
Well, look, a thing that concerns me about Fianna Fáil in relation to health is what they have said over recent years and what they've proposed is that rather than actually putting money into the public health service to make SláintCare a reality, they've actually done the opposite. They've prioritised funding for the National Treatment Purchase Fund, and like that takes money out of the public health service and puts it into for-profit medicine. And like it's not just the Social Democrats saying that. The Irish Medical Organisation were very critical of that kind of approach recently.
I'll come back to you on that, Roisin. I just have to pause this conversation for a moment to go to that breaking news that I mentioned in Europe, because Tony Connolly, our Europe editor, is on the line now. And Tony, Phil Hogan has withdrawn from the WTO contest. What's the story there?
Yeah, he's just issued a statement saying he was not going to put his name forward for nomination for the Director General of the WTO. Now, he hadn't formally declared himself a candidate, but he had said he was exploring his candidacy for the position, and he was canvassing support among EU trade ministers and generally more widely. But since that announcement that he was exploring his candidacy, member states and various commentators and observers were questioning whether this was really the right time for Phil Hogan to be doing this. You know, if he left the trade portfolio at the EU Commission at the time of the Brexit negotiations and at a time of escalating tensions from a trade perspective with the US, you know, that might not be the best move for him. And also, he would have to be replaced, and there was some concern that you might get a more protectionist candidate from maybe some of the southern member states taking over the trade portfolio in the European Commission. So for whatever reason, he's weighed up his options, and this morning he's decided not to go ahead with his candidacy, and that he will be staying on as EU Trade Commissioner. And he mentioned the fact that the contest to succeed the incumbent as Director General of the WTO, it was looking like it was going to drag on into the autumn beyond September, which was the nominal date for a replacement. And he felt that that would not be in his best interest or the best interest of the European Commission.
Okay, and the European Commission then would ordinarily convalesce around a candidate for this role, wouldn't it? So has someone else from within the Commission emerged as the possible frontrunner?
Well, you've had various names like Arantxa Gonzalez, who's the Spanish foreign minister. It doesn't necessarily come from the European Commission. Obviously, Pascal Lamy was a commissioner and he became director general of the WTO some years back. And it's not written in stone that there has to be an agreed EU candidate. It's just something that I think they would prefer. So for the moment, there isn't any obvious other candidate in the wings now waiting to come forward from the EU. That will probably happen in the coming days. And there have obviously been names coming forward. The former finance minister of Nigeria, who's number two at the World Bank, a Mexican trade negotiator, has put his name forward. So, you know, there will be runners and riders appearing now, but it's not clear exactly who would be the preferred European candidate. But certainly Phil Hogan now feels that it's just not right for him and for the European Commission at this time to put his name forward.
Tony Connolly, RTÉ's Europe Editor, thank you very much for joining me on the line. Now, I'll go to yourself, Michael Fitzmaurice, there in Roscommon, Galway, on the map of the country that you held up to great effect, I think, on Saturday to show the representation or lack thereof of senior cabinet ministers around the country. Tell me your views on that.
First of all, it was a priceless era since the history of the state, be it from Donegal down to Limerick, you always would have a senior minister in that area, you know, geographical spread, first of all. Second of all, you have 14 TDs, some of them are ministers, some of them are deputy leaders of the parties, and that's between Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and the Greens in that area, and unfortunately it wasn't seen fit to give them a senior minister. Now, you know, they have come out, I heard Eamon Ryan yesterday, and I've heard different ministers coming out saying that they represent all the country. I'm not questioning the ability of any minister. I'm not questioning, you know, the spirit of what it was done. But at the end of the day, you need an even spread, say, from different backgrounds, first of all. But on top of that, to understand the terrain. And the west of Ireland, in my opinion, has just been, and the northwest, has just been left high and dry. They have stated that Beatrice Cleary, as Chief Whip, will have the say at government. When you check up under the Constitution what the Chief Whip does, the Chief Whip organises basically the day or the business of the day. They organise the meetings of the cabinet, but after, and they organise all the votes. But after that, they don't have a say within the cabinet. They only speak when they're spoken to. If you talk to senior ministers,
I don't know about that now, Michael. Would you have them sitting quietly in the corner?
I've spoke to senior ministers because I wouldn't be familiar with it good enough. So why not take advice from people that have been there? On top of that, when you talk about super juniors or junior ministers, it's the senior minister that does the policy. So if roads, for example, under transport is 2-1 of a breakdown public against our, say, public transport, as again building roads, it's the senior minister that's going to be making the decision. Whether we like that or whether we don't, that's the reality of it, and that's how it's done.
Okay, and then for yourself, in terms of how you're likely to vote, have you had any thoughts on that?
Look at the last 3 months, I suppose, is going on. We would have, both parties sent texts that they were going to meet as our group in the last few weeks. Twice we got texts, but unfortunately they obviously know that they had enough of people, or that there was enough of numbers and the whole thing. What I will do, and always have done, is that if there's something good and positive coming in, you always support it. If there's something that's detrimental to be it my constituency, or be it the West of Ireland or the North West, or indeed any part of Ireland, I will not support it.
All right, Michael Fitzmaurice, we're going to have to leave that one there. Michael, thank you very much for joining me today, and apologies to listeners for the quality of the line. Louise O'Reilly, thank you for your patience here in studio. A lot to get through today. I want to ask you again about the role of opposition, because we saw Alan Kelly, the Labour TD, coming out very strongly against Sinn Féin, describing your manifesto as the Late Late Show giveaway over the weekend. Is there any way, do you think, that the opposition can be as effective when you're going to have that sort of splintering among the opposition parties?
Well, I don't think that kind of splintering is very helpful, but I mean, Alan's perfectly entitled to make his very best effort to get some notice. The fact is that Sinn Féin will lead the opposition. We will provide very effective and comprehensive opposition, and of course we will seek to work with all of those parties who are on the opposition benches so that we can together collectively hold the government to account. But if I could just go back to, because obviously my own area of responsibility is health, I've been very disappointed at the utterances of the new Minister for Health, in as much as there's no commitment for us to be able to keep those gains that we have as a direct result of the global pandemic. So we have increased capacity in our health service. We have more staff, and we also have additional facilities within the community. I would like to see, rather than let's wait a year and a half and then we'll have a review about whether or not we're going to do Sláinte Care, I would like to see a commitment from the incoming government that any of that additional capacity that has been created will be kept, because it's going to be absolutely essential as we head into the potential of a second wave, but even without a second wave, into winter, and we're going to need all of that capacity.
Okay, and lastly to yourself, Roisin Shortall, on the issue of Sláinte Care, Stephen Donnelly saying he is 100% committed to it, but I know he wasn't on the committee that developed the plan. Is that a real drawback for him?
I think it is a problem, and I would hope certainly that he would completely familiarise himself with it. But I mean, just to finish that point I was making earlier in relation to Fianna Fáil's priority in taking money out of the public health service and putting it into the National Treatment Purchase Fund, like, that deprives the public service of funding. And I am concerned that this morning Stephen Donnelly was talking about strategic partnerships with private medicine. That does worry me, and that very much, you know, goes against the whole principle of Sláinte Care, which is about developing a universal public health service that meets everybody's needs and brings us into line with what is available in most other European countries.
All right, Roisin Shortall, a co-leader of the Social Democrats, and also Louise O'Reilly, Sinn Féin TD for Dublin Fingal. Thank you both very much for joining me. We're going to be talking to Bertie Ahern and Fionnán Sheehan after the break.
Email todayradio@rte.ie.
Well, I'm joined in studio now by former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern and Fionnán Sheehan, Ireland correspondent with the Irish Independent, to discuss the weekend of high drama with the endorsement of the Programme for Government and also some of those controversial decisions in relation to cabinet appointments. And indeed, Bertie, thank you very much for joining me this evening, and yourself, Fionnán. I might start with you, Bertie, on that controversial appointment or lack thereof. There's a couple of them, but particularly the one around Dara Cleary going into the office of Chief Whip as opposed to a full ministry. What do you make of the idea of ignoring the Western Seaboard? Was that a mistake, do you think?
Well, listen, I never saw a reshuffle or a new cabinet that hadn't got its controversies, and this is another one. I think from Micheál Martin's point, and kind of congratulate him and all the ministers on their elections and appointments. It's never easy, and he had one out of five positions. I mean, it wasn't, if you had one out of 15, I'm sure you probably would have had two from Connacht or one from Connacht Ulster. So it wasn't like that, though. It does leave 10 counties with nobody. And Dara Cleary, I suppose, you know, everybody believes that Dara was going to be a minister, and that's the difficulty. And Dara is a very able a very able person. And I suppose if you look the other way around, if Simon Coveney was left out because he was deputy leader, or if Catherine Martin was left out, you see it's the comparable.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I suppose deputy leader and also chief negotiator for the programme for government. And,
yeah, you'd
did
expect
a lot of work
them to
in
begin.
It.
But listen,
will it cause problems for Micheál, do you think?
No, I don't think it will. I think this. Listen, there's too many other things about. But it does annoy people. There's no doubt about that. But I'd say from Dara, and particularly to Dara, the whip is an important job. That's where I cut my teeth and gotten a lot of chances. And you do learn a huge amount. I mean, whipping a three-party government, a chief whip will be an extremely difficult task. And it will mean that he'll be out of Mayo a bit more than he probably would be, because whip, it's not just dull days. You have to be around for part of Monday as well.
What about Northern Ireland then? Because there was no appointment to the Shannon for anyone from Northern Ireland. Did that surprise you?
Not really. I'd be more worried about the one good thing, the programme for government. I was delighted to see that you have the shared island unit, which is to fully implement the Good Friday Agreement. I think that will be hugely important. I think it's placed in the Taoiseach's department. I hope that's used to the full, because over the last number of years, I think there are a lot of things that should have been done with the institutions, but because they were down, that didn't happen. And there's also the social dialogue unit, which I think is hugely important. So I hope that's not lost with all of the other things, because there are so many big items on the agenda. I mean, COVID-19, I think we have to be very, very careful about that. And we heard Professor Philip Nolan on today. Yes. There's the stimulus package.
But I suppose that's the problem, isn't it? Because there's so many other things going on and big things. As you say. The Northern voice being absent, would do you not think that could cause a problem? I mean, just as an example, Ian Marshall, who is a Northern Ireland unionist, he was appointed to the Shannon in 2018. He described it as a missed opportunity to have that Northern voice.
Yeah, but here we go again. On one side, Sarah, we're talking about part of the country left out because there wasn't enough of positions. And the other side, we're saying another place didn't get because there wasn't enough of positions. The difficulty is that I'm sure when you sit down to point the Senate places, there was probably about 30 people that were looking for that position. And I think, obviously, they felt that the gender issue and to put more women into the Senate, and they got that right. So, maybe some people argue that balance is really strong. So they were trying to correct other issues. So listen, I think this issue will move on. It creates an annoyance. People will get a bit excited about it. But the reality is there are so many big issues that the government have to hit the ground running with, that they'll have to get on with very quickly.
Would you agree with that, Fiona, that this is, we're all talking about it now, we won't be talking about it next week?
Well, it's a narrative that builds up in the opening days of your government, that you've basically got, you've gone from a month ago, Fine Gael basically saying they were fending off the threat of the Green Party to rural Ireland and agriculture. You then have the abolition, effectively, of the Department of Rural Affairs. I know it's been squeezed in with the Department of Social Protection, but it's effectively gone. And then no minister from an area that would regard itself as having been left behind economically, socially, developmentally. So it's a hard sell, really, to turn around to people on the one hand and say, at election time, I was a minister, I was able to deliver for this constituency or for this region. And even as recently as last week, you had Leo Varadkar delivering a leaflet in his own constituency, pointing out to all the schools and transport projects and health projects that are underway in his constituency, which he's assuring people will continue on, even though he's not Taoiseach. And then on the other hand, saying, well, it doesn't really matter if the person is from that constituency or not. Micheál Martin would know himself from elections down in Cork, the store that he put when he was Minister for Health in sanctioning the Cork University Hospital maternity wing.
So has he stored up problems for himself then?
Well, it's a stick to beat them with, basically, from the off. And the blame, quite firmly, has been placed by Fine Gael at Fianna Fáil's door. Even after Michael McGrath on earlier, I got a call when I was outside from somebody, Fine Gael saying, we were full sure Derek Cleary was going to be in the cabinet. People were telling Michael Ring that Cleary was going to be the King of Mayo and get over it. It was absolutely and utterly assumed Cleary was in. So that's the basis they were working off. So there seems to have been a disconnect between the three parties where nobody looked at a map of the country and went, right. Yes, you can't have every county represented, you can't have every constituency represented, but you need to bring people along with you and make them feel that every part of the country is being represented at the cabinet table. And it's a difficult sell when you're basically saying that's a minister of state that is doing that. Mm. And Fine Gael were at this lark yesterday of saying that a junior minister who seems to be in charge of, I don't know what, lorries, trucks and articulated lorries is going to be the voice of the West of Ireland, but yet everybody else is supposed to be the voice of every part of Ireland. It's a bit of a garbled message, really.
Would it surprise you, Bertie, that Leo Varadkar and Micheál Martin wouldn't have talked about this, their appointments, to make sure that they had an even spread?
Yes, because I know, with Mary Harney or with the Labour government, I mean, we certainly knew the night before, you know, what the makeup was. Okay, the leaders then would talk to their people on the following morning, which was the traditional thing. But listen to a lot of commentaries. There's just two points I'd quickly like to make, as I was a quarter of a century at the cabinet table. One is there's rarely votes. In my 11 years, I can't remember one vote. Maybe there was, somebody will correct me, but I don't remember one vote. But the other thing is, I mean, super junior ministers, which were not there in my time, but the constitution is, it's 9 members, and max 15. So, you know, there are only 15 members at the cabinet table, because, you know, people can get confused that super juniors are ministers. They're not.
OK, so Michael Fitzmaurice's point a little earlier that they can sit there and speak when they're spoken to, that would be your sense of it as well?
Yeah, they can. Like, I regularly would bring in junior ministers, because if it's their responsibility, they would come in to speak.
OK.
But constitutionally, and we still...
That's not where the power lies.
15 ministers.
If Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar didn't speak to each other, I'm wondering what you think that says about their relationship and what they need to do in terms of making this coalition work, about speaking to each other.
I think it was the 2 metre rule. They're all too far apart.
There's a bit of a garbled message there when the three super junior ministers as such were there for the last couple of years. Their roles have now been merged into full cabinet members. Mm. So you're kind of going, well, if they were doing a perfectly good job as super junior ministers and were being told that they have necessary authority, then why did you not leave them as ministers of state or super junior ministers in or leave those roles as such, and you felt you actually needed? So, for example, Mary Mitchell O'Connor was Minister for Higher Education, sitting at the cabinet table for the last 3 years, and yet Micheál Martin is saying, well, that's not good enough, you need a full department for higher education. So, again, a mixed message there. It does come down to the optics of it, and this is politics.
Bertie, I do think it's a good idea, but having higher level education, science and innovation in one department, because the presidents of the colleges, I think, and Micheál Martin, that was one of his proposals in opposition, and I think it's a good idea, because, you know, there's so much of the future is wrapped up in third level education.
Okay, can I ask you then about the future of Fianna Fáil? A lot of talk again over the weekend about the end of civil war politics and all of that. Conor Lenihan is writing in the Irish Times today about how this could lead to a merger between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. How likely do you think that is?
Well, not in my lifetime, I don't think. But
do you not?
Not merged. But there is a difficulty that... you know, the ground has switched. I mean, the old organisational thing in every constituency, that the two big outfits were Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. They were, you know, battling each other out. They had big membership. They had very active membership. Those days have been dwindling. Unfortunately, from my point of view, I mean, you can... I was saying to Fianna Fáil as we came in, I remember the days from Fianna Fáil, at least on paper, with a 50 or 60,000 members. They were strong in every constituency in the country.
So I mean, that, just as an example...
That doesn't exist. And the same applied to Fine Gael. It wouldn't have been as
OK, but we had Eamon O'Queevin on this programme in the last couple of weeks, saying that he believed that after this government formation, there would be two big parties left and one of them wouldn't be Fianna Fáil.
Well, there is a danger, but it depends on how Fianna Fáil handle that. I mean, if I was to give one bit of advice to Micheál Martin, which I don't think he'd take anyway, but if I was, it would be that he has a job now for 2.5 years to run the government and to do a really good job in very difficult circumstances. You know, tomorrow is the deadline for Brexit, what's going to happen there, COVID, the economic plan, the next budget. All these things are huge.
But when you say there's a danger...
Organisationally, I think there's another big challenge for Fianna Fáil. And, you know, that job needs to be done. Now, whether they do it or not, Eamon O'Keefe, I think, and others would fear that they won't. So then they continue to weaken. So it's the challenge for what happens in the next few years organisationally. If they don't do that, you know, Sinn Féin will grow and grow. I mean, Sinn Féin are active on the ground. I mean, I see it in the city. I mean, their membership is growing. There's no doubt about that. So, you know,
Sinn Féin will grow, Fine Gael will grow. Is that the danger?
Well, I think the danger, what some people are saying, that Fine Gael will hold on to their traditional middle upper class vote of 25% plus or minus. Sinn Féin could grow and Fianna Fáil would be squeezed. I mean, that's the fear. But the challenge for Fianna Fáil, which I hope they take up to, is organisationally to do what they haven't done for the last decade, and that's to get their act ready on the ground. And unfortunately, that's not the case. And that's
Neil
what
Martin
happened
has failed
in the last
in that
election.
Regard.
It's not a question. It's a question of being able to put in a huge amount of work and effort to do several jobs. And I think as Taoiseach, you can't do that. Even as leader of the opposition, you need others in the party to take on that challenge.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. I'm so sorry for not having a little bit more time. But Taoiseach, former Taoiseach Bertie Ahern and Fionn Sheehan, Ireland correspondent with the Irish Independent, thank you both so much for joining me today. And it's just gone 11 o'clock. We'll go now to Brian Jennings in the newsroom.
Email todayradio@rte.ie.
Well, the government has a busy few weeks in store with an economic stimulus to agree, Brexit negotiations intensifying and managing the continued fallout from the COVID-19 health pandemic. So here to talk us through what we can expect from the first 100 days, I'm joined by Justine McCarthy, columnist with the Sunday Times, Shane Ross, former Minister for Transport, and our own Niamh Lyons. And thank you all very much for joining me today. Shane, I might start with yourself because the new cabinet is meeting at 2 p.m. today. They've already had an informal meeting on Saturday night, but it will all be very much down to business, we're told, this afternoon. What's it going to be like, from your experience, for the new ministers coming in on a very sharp learning curve, I imagine?
It's going to be pretty tough. I mean, when we came in, we didn't have the sort of crisis that they have here now today, and it's going to be very, very difficult. So personally, it's going to be a great day for them all. Of course, it's going to be quite arresting, quite difficult. It's the first day is... It's kind of civil servants that are the thing that strike you as something you haven't had before. That you get surrounded by people on day one, not being told what to do, but kind of being guided and handled and given all sorts of documents to read. So it's a bit bewildering.
How long did it take you to get to grips with it?
About 4 years. you never quite get to grips with the whole thing because things are moving so very, very quickly. But I think, you know, let me just say, I wish them well. I think it's going to be really, really difficult for them, and it's a great personal success. But it's you know, I think what they're going to realise very, very early on, which it took me a long time to realise in some ways, is that they're going to be very constrained, and everything is out the window almost the day you walk in there, because the difficulties of COVID and Brexit and all the things which are surrounding them, the problems of the economy, are going to suppress, unfortunately for them, a lot of their aspirations and a lot of their promises. And even the programme for government is obviously going to be, you know, it's going to be something which may be subject to, you know, pressures from outside which they can't fulfil.
So do you think the programme for government is implementable?
Well, I think it'll be difficult. I think it's going to be very, very hard, because one of the things about the programme for government is that I'm not saying it's dishonest in any way, it's not costed properly. So we haven't got a budget yet. We don't see how it's going to be paid for. So I think some of it's going to be aspirational. And programmes for government, unfortunately, and we found in our experience, you don't deliver on everything that's in there, unfortunately, because you can't do.
OK, so you have to pick your priorities, Justine, obviously, and the three parties will have to do that. A lot to be done in the first 100 days. What do you reckon the priorities will be?
Well, there's a huge amount that they've already committed to doing in the first 100 days. apart from COVID-19 and, you know, the uncertainty that that presents to them, the immediate task they have to do is to unveil the so-called July stimulus. And that's worth 6 billion euros. So this is a massive package. It involves 2 billion euro funding for medium to big businesses, another 2 billion euro in credit insurance scheme. There's the warehousing of commercial taxes for a year. So that's going to come up first. This week, they're probably going to be working on issues like the air bridges for people inward traffic to Ireland. They will start immediately working on budget 2021. And on the same day as the budget, they're going to announce the National Economic Plan. They're going to also, within the first 100 days, do the review of the National Development Plan, which is worth 116 billion euro. And we even saw in the lacuna between the leaders signing off on the programme for government and before the party memberships voted it through, already a row flared between Fine Gael and the Greens about, you know, whether the M20 from Cork to Limerick was going to be built within the lifetime of the government. You've Brexit, the deadline expiring tomorrow for the UK to ask for the extension, which they're probably not going to do. Also within the first 100 days, you have the Climate Action Bill, which is the central policy of the Green Party. And that comes with a lot of sort of subsidiary detail that's going to be announced between now and September. And that's only the half of it, really.
So a lot to do, Niamh. And obviously also building new relationships and trying to get to know each other a little bit better is going to be one of their jobs. So today we're going to have this strange dynamic, I'm sure, at Cabinet, where Leo Varadkar is no longer taking the Taoiseach seat. How is that all going to work out?
It's going to be strange, I think, for the former Taoiseach himself, but even for his own colleagues, because we've yet to see, there's a lot on paper in the programme for government about how things will work, but Micheál Martin himself, as the new Taoiseach, is sitting there with both his predecessor and his successor. And for the first time ever, there's a ticking clock on the Taoiseach's office. So we've never known before when a Taoiseach was going to finish his term. We know now. I think the everything we're hearing at the moment is about how this is an equal partnership. So that's something that can be agreed in principle, but how will it work in theory? I mean, I was even thinking about the notion of a discussion on Brexit, perhaps if something is suggested by Micheál Martin, and then does An Tánaiste say, well, that's not really the way the tea leaves were when we last left Brussels. And then the Taoiseach says, well, it's how I intend to proceed now. So will he try and utilise as much of the old information as he can, or does he plot his own individual course? And then I suppose the other part of that is that he has to store up a little bit of goodwill for down the road, because this situation will flip.
Yeah, and in the middle of all this then, sorry, do you want to comment?
Yeah, I think you've put it, you've touched an interesting point. I mentioned this, funnily enough, to the Taoiseach as we were leaving the other day, and I said one of the things that strikes me about Cabinet is that nobody really have a good friends in Cabinet. They get on quite well, but do you go to each other's houses? Do you know each other very well? Do we do that? And the personal relationships are very strange. They're political relationships. And I would have thought that here the important thing is to build up trust amongst each other, which they probably haven't got yet because they don't know each other very well, and build up personal relationships. Otherwise, it's going to be very difficult. And within Cabinet, normally, the chemistry may be quite good sometimes, but you don't actually get on really well as friends. You don't, you know, when we were there, Finney and I and John and Boxer got on very well, okay, but we didn't have really good friends in Fine Gael. And I would guess that they ought to strike out good personal relationship. It's going to be a good government.
And what about Niamh's point there about there being an end date already for Micheál Martin? I know that you previously referred to Enda Kenny as being a political corpse because he had announced his own departure date. But does that damage a leader when there is an end date in the calendar?
Yeah, well, he proved me wrong, didn't he? He stayed on for about 18 months afterwards, or a year afterwards. Yeah, I think if you've got that kind of, you know, gallows awaiting you at some stage, it is very difficult for you. And that's his maximum period. That's not his minimum period, of course. So he's going to be there for 2.5 years, absolutely maximum. It does lessen your power. You're a bit of a lame duck, I suspect, for your last 6 or 8 months as a result.
OK, so tell me about the Green Party then, Shane, in your view, and how they're going to, or how they should go about their business. Because it strikes me that you had the Judicial Appointments Bill or a commitment towards that in the programme for government.
Yeah.
And it didn't get across the line, despite your very best efforts.
Yeah.
Why didn't it, you think, and is that the sort of thing that the Green Party is facing in terms of internal opposition?
Yes, you have to be careful. The Judicial Appointments Bill, which, by the way, it's been revived, but it's going to be diluted, I think, in a certain way, in maybe important ways, not so much so. Yeah, you've got to, again, it's a matter of trust. And I had a difficulty with that one, particularly because, really, Fine Gael wasn't in favour of it. They kept their promise, and Andy Kenny and both Leo kept their promise, but there were certain people within Fine Gael who really didn't like it at all, so they weren't going to be very helpful to it. And if you don't have the push behind it, it's going to drag, and there are going to be ways of delaying it as well. And that one was filibustered. And I felt that the government itself, I was really the only person in the government who was really enthusiastic about that. It was a reform. So they could delay it, and they could be frustrated in the way that I was to a certain extent. Now, some people were very good. The Taoiseach himself was absolutely superb at pushing it on. But there were others there who wanted to see it go slow progress in it.
Why?
Well, the lawyers are very powerful people. The judges are very, very powerful people. They've got their tentacles everywhere, and they managed to have a great deal of influence on politicians, whether you like it or not. And they were delaying it as well, and they were putting pressure on people as well. So you know, you can get it down in the programme. We had it down the programme, and you can get all the goodwill you like out of Fine Gael, but you can have external forces who have ways of delaying it, and they managed to delay it for long enough for the filibuster. Which was delayed.
So, what, you're saying Fine Gael ministers were enthralled to the legal profession?
I think that there are a lot of lawyers in the Dáil, and all the lawyers in the Dáil were against that particular bill, and so it was very difficult to fight it. And as well, the judges were lobbying against the Judicial Appointments Bill very, very strongly, and they're very, very influential amongst many politicians. I mean, politicians and judges are joined at the hip in certain ways. The appointment of judges is something which I have a great problem with because it's too political. And that's always been the case, and that's something we wanted to break. But they managed to exert enough influence to delay it for long enough for it not to actually finally get through.
Did you ever threaten to walk over it?
Oh, I think lots of times. Yes, I did.
Were you serious?
I suppose you're serious when you threaten to walk when you get angry. And then you think, is it really worth walking? There's so much else to do elsewhere if you walk, and it could be done anyway. But I certainly got very angry about it. I had some extremely robust exchanges with Charlie Flanagan. I don't think that's a secret in any way.
Was he the person you're referring to then in terms of filibustering and delaying it?
No, he didn't do any filibustering in the Dáil, if that's what you mean. No, he didn't at all. I don't think he was particularly enthusiastic about it. If he'd been in government without us, he wouldn't have pursued the bill. And you can see also from the new programme for government, it's not there. It's an undiluted form. It's going to be diluted.
Okay, so from what the Green Party can learn from all of this, speaking of lobbies and heavy lobbying and a lot of it, we all know that there's plenty of them on the fossil fuel and agriculture industries who will be very opposed to some of what the Green Party wants to do. So do you reckon the Green Party will have similar problems?
Oh, I'm sure they will. I mean, obviously, you can see from what's happened in the cabinet choices that there's a lot of unjoined up thinking. I mean, one of the problems there is, you know, the West didn't get a minister, but none of them obviously sat back and looked at a map and said, hey, what's happening here? Why isn't there? They went and did all their internal thinking, appointed their internal people, and then they come up with and they find, God almighty, we haven't got anybody in the West. So they're going to have to think the big picture and cooperate a little bit more than I suspect we did.
Justine, on Micheál Martin then over the weekend, we have a text here actually which might be of interest to you. This person says, Jay in Mayo says, wouldn't like to be a Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael canvasser in Mayo or indeed anywhere from Donegal down in the next general election. A lot of long grass along the western seaboard for the electorate to hide in over the next few years. Do you think that that's likely the way it will go?
I think it does cause resentment within a constituency or a region if it doesn't get a minister. And Cork people actually will well remember when Charlie Haughey became Taoiseach after... he seemed to think that Jack Lynch had, you know, had his spell in Cork, and that Cork didn't need a minister for a long time. And there was a lot of resentment in Cork towards Charlie Haughey because of that. Now, having said that, when I was coming in, I heard Brendan from Cork, I think texting you saying, you know, this thing of every region must have its own minister is ridiculous. And I tend to agree. You know, we elect a government for the country, not for areas, just as we choose a commissioner to go to Europe, not for Ireland, but for the EU.
Is that the way it works, or is there evidence that constituencies do benefit when they have a minister?
I think this is very interesting, because I think Micheál Martin on Saturday, when he announced his cabinet, immediately in doing that, made a statement that he was moving away from the traditions around cabinet formation. And one of them is, for instance, the idea that traditionally finance, foreign affairs, justice and trade and enterprise are the big prestigious portfolios. Now, he has allowed Fine Gael to retain all those portfolios. I think that's being missed in the debate about nobody from Connacht. And I think the statement in that is he wants to make his mark on education, which has always been very close to his heart, and on housing and on health. So he's picked the sort of workman-like hack portfolios. He has two and a half years to do this. I remember when Michael McDougall became Minister for Justice, he said, you really need two consecutive terms as a minister to achieve the change you want to make. That's 10 years. Micheál Martin has 30 months, and he's determined to make a legacy for himself, I believe.
Just on that text, before I come to yourself, Niamh, if the voters are waiting in the long grass on the Western Seaboard, if they are upset, will it be Micheál Martin they would punish, or is it not as much up to Leo Varadkar to have not appointed or to have appointed?
Well, I think the government or whoever is seen to lead the government,
so it's Micheál Martin,
will get the grief. And I think the local elections will probably be a time when we'll see, you know, how to what extent that has materialised.
Niamh, on Micheál Martin's leadership style then, Justine already pointing out how he's likely to focus on, I can't remember the
education,
phrase. Education and health and housing. Yeah, the real hard-working ministries.
The banana skin ones as well.
Yeah.
Could get into a lot of trouble.
So how do you think his leadership style will differ then from what we've seen from Leo Varadkar?
Vastly different, I do think. And obviously there is a more somber context to his taking up of office at the moment. I mean, I don't think we'll see the kind of sort of letters to Kylie Minogue and Mean Girls references.
Do we know who Micheál Martin would write a letter to? Do we have any sense of it? Anybody?
Maybe it would have been Bruce Springsteen, but I think he's a bit more serious in general. I suppose if you look at how they have attacked each other, Micheál Martin has always attacked Leo Varadkar for the spin, and I suppose the return fire has always been in relation to hypocrisy from Fianna Fáil. So I suppose with the cabinet itself as well, one of the interesting things is that, and I do agree with Justine, you're not really a minister for a region, but how cabinet works is almost like a dinner table in a large family home somewhere. You know, when the mother brings out a big cake, all the kids are watching to see who got the biggest bit of cake. And if one person gets a bit bigger piece than they want to know, you know, that's kind of the thinking. And I think what we saw even in the last weeks of the last government with Michael Ring really lobbying strongly for the kilometres to be expanded for rural people. That's the type of decision that's made with an eye to someone's own constituency and what they're hearing. But I think as well, the other issue that could crop up for them in the geographical sense is the fact that in the likes of Mayo, there's now 3 out of 4 government TDs. In the likes of even Cork South Central, 3 out of 4. So if a government goes to the polls the next time, even if that is in 5 years' time, and that's replicated across a lot of constituencies, even in Dublin West, are they going to lose footing completely simply because they're all together? And I think if you look at the likes of even the west of Ireland, you have Claire Curran, Rose Conway Walsh from Sinn Féin. You know, Sinn Féin had a good election. Martin Kenny did a really good election in that area, and they will only grow now in opposition. So perhaps that's just something they may already have been a little bit outflanked on.
Okay, to yourself then, finally, Shane, on the longevity of this government. Do you think it would last the term? Off to a little bit of a rocky start, I think it's fair to say.
Well, they've all made some fairly rocky decisions. I mean, the omission of Richard Bruton, I think, is quite extraordinary on the Fine Gael side as well, which we haven't passed. I think they're going to miss that. Longevity is very difficult to predict. I mean, because in the last government, they said that we wouldn't last 6 months, if you remember, and it lasted 4 years and a bit. Don't underestimate the capacity of people to stay in government once they've been there for a long time. Politicians are very reluctant to get out. And I think in a crisis situation, which we're going to be in for some time to come, it's very, very unlikely that there'll be any serious hiccups, because it's too serious a situation for that to happen. Down the line, I think there probably are fundamental differences, but I think the problems will probably come internally from the parties rather than the fighting amongst themselves. I think there'll be problems, big problems in the Greens at some stage, and probably big problems in Fianna Fáil as well.
All right, and what about yourself? What are your plans?
Well, I'm writing a book. It's going to be finished hopefully for Christmas. It's going to be called In Bed with the Blue Shirts, which
you're going to tell us all.
I'm going to tell you an awful lot you didn't know. I can promise you that. Okay, that's right. The first step.
That's enough to keep you busy. Shane Ross, former Minister for Transport; Justine McCarthy, columnist with the Sunday Times; and our own Niamh Lyons. Thank you all very much for joining me.